Punzio v. Astru. Ms. Rose. Oh, Mr. Rose, I'm sorry. Yes, go ahead.
Yes, my name is Ashley Rose. I represent the plaintiff appellant in this case. And if it please the court, my brief, I think, delineates all of the major arguments that I have advanced with regard to why this case should be reversed. I would like to, at this point, concentrate a little on why I believe that step two in the sequential evaluation process is particularly important, especially when one reads the decision of the ALJ as a whole. I know that some of the more recent cases, particularly, for example, Zatz v. Astru, apparently don't think that the functional analysis on a function-by-function basis is important or is required. I'm not saying that step two requires that, but if one reads SSR 96-3P, which expresses the commissioner's policy with regard to step two, a good deal more.
Could you be more concrete? What is it you're complaining about?
Okay, that the ALJ doesn't have substantial evidence for just asserting that certain conditions are severe. In this case, he talks about that the severity is anxiety, and doesn't even list all of the impairments that are in the record itself.
But the carpal tunnel problems and the mood disorders
got
Ms. Punzio over the hump and on to step three.
Yes, but when I say when you say it goes over the hump, there's only, in my opinion, there are only two ways to justify that. One is to say that.
Well, what is Ms. I don't understand you. What is Ms. What is your complaint? Administrative law judge ignored?
Well, what he did not do was to make a functional analysis at step two to determine which impairments, alleged impairments, or the impairments that are identified in the medical record are either severe or not severe.
But isn't step two, well, I thought step two was clearly designed to weed out mild impairments.
Well, it is, but if you read the
What is he left out specifically? What impairment is it that isn't getting the proper weight in this case?
It's the combination of impairments which must be considered throughout the sequential evaluation process, and that is whether or not you have a severe or a non-severe impairment. All of them, if you have more than one, all of them must be considered. Well, he says that she has a couple of severe impairments, but he doesn't have any. First of all, the simple answer: he doesn't have any substantial evidence for that assertion.
Well, I don't understand you. Why are you backing away from when he says she has severe impairments?
Well, because
I don't know what you're driving at. What is it that's been left out?
The functional analysis.
Get this functional analysis gibberish. Just be very concrete. What is her inability to work that somehow he has the administrative law judge ignored? There was some problem she had that didn't give enough weight to. It has to be something like that.
Well, for example, he doesn't show how the combination of bipolar disorder with depressive features and learning disorder in combination might be more than an individual with learning disorder alone.
Doesn't that turn into the issue with the vocational expert? That is, isn't your real argument that the administrative law judge didn't give the vocational expert a rich enough picture of her mental and physical conditions so that he couldn't really evaluate how many jobs she might be able to fill? Isn't that your real?
Well, that is the most important final
argument.
All right,
so why don't
you,
yes. The most important, why don't you address that? Now,
well, all right.
What is it that the ALJ should have said to the vocational expert that he left out?
Well, he should have, for one thing, he actually even says it in his decision that he says this to the vocational expert that he's bypassing the whole question of the mental disorder.
But he did say to the vocational expert it had to be a job for someone who can't work with other people, which is one of her, you know, mental symptoms.
Well, that's...
So what else should the ALJ have said?
Well, he should have had some...
Be concrete. What should he have said to the vocational expert?
Okay, he should have said someone who has an inability to sustain herself on task because of diminished concentration, that she would not be able to learn new tasks in a rapid or in a rapid enough manner to satisfy an employer in competitive employment, particularly when it's when he comes down on light work with so-called simple 1- and 2-step operations. Those are usually some kind of manual labor or assembly line type things that she would have to be able to keep up. How does he know that she could keep up when she has anxiety attacks, when she doesn't have the ability to even, for example, anhedonia. She doesn't have the desire to do anything. She wants to stay home. She wants to lie down. She sleeps all day and gets awake at night. Those are the things that could have been informative to the vocational expert, who would then be able to...
Well, I don't understand. If she sleeps all day and she can't do anything, then you don't even get to the vocational expert. Then the administrative law judge says, yeah, you're completely disabled.
Well, but he didn't say that. He didn't even consider it.
You have to... Is your argument that the administrative law judge should have stopped and said, look, you're completely disabled, we don't need the vocational expert?
Well, no.
All right, so if you're saying the vocational expert was important, you can't say she's sleeping all day. What kind of question would be the administrator to the vocational expert to say, well, actually, this is a person who sleeps all day. Now, what kind of job can she do when she sleeps all day? That's not a reasonable question.
Well, respond to your question appropriately.
Appropriately, what realistically should the administrative law judge have said to the vocational expert? This is a person, I understood your first point, diminished concentration. That's fine. Okay, that's might be significant. That's fine. What else?
Well, the fact that she has major depression, which he doesn't seem to take into consideration at all, major depression does impede a person's ability to stay on task. They don't, the question of anhedonia, they don't have this tenacity.
What is that word?
Anhedonia. It means that you don't feel, that you don't have any interest in anything. You don't want to do anything.
Apathetic.
You start something and you don't finish it. Things of that nature. If a person is like that, are they likely to be able to sustain themselves in a one
sounds
and...
like total disability. Again, I don't understand why you're...
Well, but the judge didn't say that. The ALJ didn't say that. He says that she is disabled. She's not disabled.
Yes, but you... I can understand you're arguing that she's totally disabled. I'm having trouble with what you think she wasn't... If the judge can't make that judgment... what it is he's supposed to ask the vocational expert. Are there any jobs for people with major depression? I don't understand.
Well, I don't believe there are.
All right, then what do you need a vocational expert for?
Well, I'm only going on the basis of the record, Your Honor. I wasn't the person at the administrative hearing. I only reviewed the record like you do. And that's what the ALJ says.
Didn't the ALJ say that he did not find the severity or debilitating nature of her complaints fully credible?
Yes, he said that. But he says that without any substantial evidence. That is to say, and I've pointed that out in my brief, that he didn't use the special technique, for example, at step three, which is required by 20 CFR 404.1520A. He doesn't do that. He left out altogether the analysis of the A criteria in the mental listings, 12.04. He leaves that out altogether, so you don't have a predicate for his conclusions based upon the B criteria, that she's able to associate with other people, that she can do her daily activities okay, and all of that kind of thing. He's never made a functional analysis of anything to support his conclusions. And I think that is a reversible error.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Rose. Mr. Martin?
Thank you.
May it please the Court, John Martin on behalf of the Commissioner of Social Security. I will just respond to some of the points Mr. Rose made here, but I would just begin by saying that in his brief, he basically attacked the ALJ's decision at each step of the sequential analysis. And at step two, I agree with Judge Rovner that all the ALJ really has to do is identify severe impairments, and then he's over the hump, or Ms. Ponzio is over the hump, and she goes to step three, where the ALJ determines, as Judge Posner was saying, whether the person is just disabled based on a listing. And here, the only physical impairment Ms. Ponzio has is carpal tunnel syndrome. And she had very minimal treatment for that. She had surgery, I think, in December of 2001 on the left and then in January of 2002 on the right. Very short follow-up after that with Dr. Schiffman, who said the surgery went well. And then there's nothing in the record about carpal tunnel surgery or carpal tunnel symptom until she had an EMG test in July of 2006.
But, you know, the vocational expert testified that Ms. Ponzio could perform factory jobs, assembly jobs, packing jobs. These would not be jobs that someone with carpal tunnel problems should perform. Even if the ALJ found that she no longer suffered from carpal tunnel syndrome, these repetitive jobs they're a terrible idea for someone who is prone to carpal tunnel syndrome in the first place. Terrible.
Your Honor, and that's why I don't think the ALJ made that finding. The ALJ stopped the sequential analysis here at step four. There is no step five finding. The ALJ did not find that she could do those jobs, notwithstanding the vocational expert testimony that you're referring to. The ALJ found she could return to her past job as a custodian and made no step five finding.
Well, that, you know, someone who pushes a broom, who pushes a heavy vacuum cleaner, who uses her hands all the time to dust, to reach, this vocational expert, I thought he was shocking. The evidence doesn't indicate that she had recovered from her carpal tunnel syndrome, and the vocational expert's idea of what someone with carpal tunnel syndrome can do certainly makes no sense at all.
Well, Your Honor, the The evidence here of the carpal tunnel syndrome is quite minimal. As I said, she simply had the surgeries. It was recommended that she attend occupational therapy. I think the ALJ noted that she did not attend the occupational therapy. And then she has no treatment whatsoever for 5 years. I think it's reasonable for the ALJ to assume that she's recovered fairly well from that. And then she has one test in July of 06. And what the doctor says about that test is, these are pretty much the findings you'd expect for someone who underwent carpal tunnel surgery a few years ago. And that's really all the evidence there is. Now, if I may, I did notice this. This is nothing that either one of us argued, and it is in the record, and it is after the ALJ made his decision. But sometimes you ask what would happen if we remanded this case. And at the hearing, she identified a Dr. Virant, Jennifer Virant, as her treating physician. So in July of 08, Dr. Virant sent a letter. And at that time, there had been no further testing. And what Dr. Virant says is, she has been seeing an orthopedist about her hand condition. She's currently seeking a second opinion and is repeating her EMG. That's the EMG that she had in July of 06. She is unable to do repetitive tasks or heavy lifting with her hands at this time. So that's all her doctor is limiting her, even as of January of 08. And repetitive tasks, I think a vocational expert would not say that working as a custodian in a school is repetitive tasks. Repetitive tasks to a VE are more using a punch press, the kind of work you would do in a factory.
What is a custodian? I don't even know. Is that a janitor?
Yeah, she worked as a janitor at a school. Yes.
That's what I do at home.
Mm. No, I'm concerned about the credibility finding where the ALJ says that about the severity and debilitating nature of her subjective complaints not being fully credible, and then talks about how her statements concerning intensity, persistence, and limiting effects of these symptoms are not entirely credible. Yet, does he go on to explain what he means by that?
Yes, he does, Your Honor. He goes on and he says that these findings don't warrant anything more than what he found, which is that she cannot, the specific limitation on her hands is that she cannot do keyboarding. And I would say, even based on that recent statement by Dr. Virant, that that's a reasonable limitation. The other thing I think where the ALJ kind of built his bridge between his credibility finding and the facts is, we had a hearing, he asked this person, Ms. Ponzio, at the hearing, what is your most significant impairment? What is really bothering you? And she said, my hands are really bothering me. And then the ALJ says in his decision, how does that back up her alleged need to lie down all day? Or how does that back up her supposed inability to concentrate when she's identified the hand problem as her most significant problem?
Yes, but she's mentally ill. Look.
She's receiving treatment for mental illness, and she's doing well with that treatment, yes.
And mentally ill people, you know, lie down all day very often. You know, in the brief, you claim that the ALJ's residual functional capacity finding accommodated her medical limitations by restricting her from contact with the general public and from tasks requiring more than two steps. It seems to me she has had a long and extensive history of mental health problems. How can these two things be the only limitations on her functional capacity? And, you know, when an applicant's mental health waxes and wanes over time and seasons, I really think it was error for the ALJ to emphasize improvements in mental health at any point in time without considering the ups and downs and the nature of mental illness.
Well, Your Honor, I would just look at the history of the mental health treatment in this case. She has alleged an onset date in 1997. In 1998, she had a one-week full hospitalization, and then after that, she stayed in a partial hospitalization program for 3 weeks. After that, she had some very specialized testing with Dr. Russo and then I think with a Dr. Mylan. And then really after that, she had no treatment whatsoever. There's a large gap in the evidence, no treatment whatsoever between 98 and 2003. And when she goes for treatment in 2003, it's not even the doctor's statements. She's telling the doctors, I feel better than I have in years. Mr. Rose has talked about anhedonia. This is a person who attends AA meetings every day. This is a person who was able to obtain a GED during the time period she's alleging she's disabled. She does go out of the house. She goes to these AA meetings every day. She doesn't have anhedonia. Doctors
well,
talked
maybe
about.
She comes back from the AA meeting and get, you know, and gets into bed.
Maybe she does, but Your Honor, usually in these cases, what we look for when someone says that they're lying down all day or they have this alleged need to lie down, the question we usually ask is, did this person make this complaint to her doctors? Is she going in and telling her doctors, I need to lie down all day? And I would suggest that if you review the records with Dr. Swain and Dr. Canale, the two treating mental health practitioners, you won't see that complaint. What you will see is, I'm doing better. I felt better than I've felt in years. I'm looking forward to the summer. I've had a two-year relationship with a boyfriend. I'm going to feel better in the summer. Those are the statements that impressed the ALJ, and that's why he came up with the limitations he had.
I don't want to ask an unfair question, but, oh, you're smiling, but...
And do it anyway.
What jobs do you think this woman who cannot be with the public, who can't do tasks that require more than two steps, what can she do?
Well, I don't know that we're...
What can she do?
I don't know how we should interpret that statement. To me, when I read these, and again, I do a lot of these cases every year, contact with the general public is...
You're so good at it. I just want to say that.
The contact with the general public would be a cashier, someone who works in a store, someone who's just interacting with the public all the time. I don't think we're isolating her, but I do think the school custodian is a pretty good job for someone who needs limited contact with the public, and that usually they'll come into the school and clean the school after hours, so they are not really having to work with anyone, unlike a cashier or someone who works at a store and has to be in contact with the public all the time. I think that's the distinction that is being made here.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr.
Thank Long. You. I would ask that you affirm the commissioner's decision.
Mr. Rose, do you have anything further? You can have a minute if you want.
Just a couple of remarks, Your Honor. First of all, I think that the idea that pain is a residual of carpal tunnel syndrome is well known, and that ALJ did not really go into the whole question of pain at that point. The idea that there were gaps in the treatment, the ALJ certainly didn't ask whether or not she had insurance or funds to pay for treatment, and that certainly is something that should have been done. She should have had at least the opportunity to say why didn't she have treatment, not because she just simply didn't want it. Also, I think it's very important to note that she was on some very very powerful, potent medications, Wellbutrin, Lamictal are two of the things that come to mind. Also, she did say that this idea of that depression, bipolar disorder is kind of, up and down. She did talk about her depression as being seasonal, that early in the spring she'd get better, and then in the fall in July or towards the end of the summer she'd start going back down again. Those are the things that I think that the ALJ didn't really understand the nature of this.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Rose. Thank you, Mr. Mark.
Actually, would ask you to reverse.
Next case for argument, United States versus Sanchez. Mr.